Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture, with your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection for Thursday, June 7th, 2012. Still from Carolyn Aaron's 10th and newest CD, Love Was Here First. Along with her 10 CDs, Carolyn has also authored two critically acclaimed books, and her third, Theology in Aisle 7, a collection of her Christianity Today columns, has just been released as an ebook for Kindle and Nook. Carolyn's on the phone with us tonight to talk both about her recording and her writing careers. Good evening, Carolyn.
Good evening.
Now, which came first, the music or like the essay type nonfiction writing?
Well, now that's a good question, because certainly professionally the music came first, but if you'd asked me when I was a kid what I wanted to be when I grew up, I probably would have told you an author. I was, you know, a very bookish kid. There was a space between my bed and the wall that I used to spend a ridiculous amount of time in reading books. And so probably love of words and language came first, but for sure, career-wise, the music happened first.
Why did the music happen first? Was that just an accident, or was that something you pursued?
Oh boy, I think I didn't consciously pursue it. I think is the right answer to the question. But I certainly discovered music early on too, and I was a really shy kid, and I discovered songwriting as kind of a way of communicating with the world and probably with myself and with God. And so I started writing songs early too, like probably around age 10. And, going to university, didn't say I wanted to be a musician or an author probably by that stage. Both those jobs seemed preposterous. But was certainly writing songs all the time and sort of couldn't help myself. And then, yeah, pretty much right after graduating from university and getting married, an opportunity came up to start writing songs for other recording artists, and then that kind of snowballed into my thing. So a combination of a drive that was there that I wouldn't quite own, and God tugging me along and doors opening and sort of ending up on an adventure.
Well, going back to those early days, and you're saying you're quite a bookish kid and that, who were your early influences as a writer?
Wow, you know, all these years of my music career, everybody always asked me that about music and not about writers, and so now I have to go back and try to think, who was I reading back then?
Well, the writing one will, the music one will come.
Yeah, okay, good. Well, that one I'm prepped for somewhat. But the reading one, what was I reading? I mean, I read The Hobbit and Watership Down, that kind of stuff. I read there were these really, when I was really young, there were these really girly books by Frances Hodgson Burnett, like The Secret Garden and books like that I loved the language in. I was really into those. And I remember going with my grandmother into a shop when I was really young and her saying, "Do you have anything new by Frances Hodgson Burnett?" And the bookshop owner saying, "Well, she's been dead for about 50 years. So I like old, dusty books, and then gradually kind of found my way. It's interesting. I love fiction, but I found my way into a lot of nonfiction and memoir kind of writers. So more moving towards adulthood, there's a writer named Frederick Buechner who's been a huge influence, I would say, on both my prose writing and my music.
Mm-hmm.
Just a guy who's amazing with language. And people like Madeline L'Engle, actually her fiction and her nonfiction, and Thomas Merton and Henry Nouwen and people like that. If you get me going now on those guys, I won't stop.
Well, and looking at that and looking at it in terms of both the depth of your essay writing and your lyrics, I can see those influences coming through. Having read, you know, people like L'Engle and Thomas Merton and that as well, there's a depth there that you can get through their writing that you can't find in some other places.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, those guys are giants. And, you know, one of the main hypotheses, I would say, of Buechner's work is that you have to listen to your life. You have to be awake. And he has this this kind of opening statement in one of his books, The Sacred Journey, that says, God is speaking into and out of the thick of our days.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, as an artist and an author, that's a huge part of it, is just trying to wake myself up and listen and pay attention to the stuff that doesn't seem like it's important but actually is. So those guys have helped me a lot with that in the way they write.
So who were your, let's go to the other one, who were your early musical influences?
Well, I it's funny, I heard your show with Arlen Salty, and very similar to him, I grew up with a lot of Jesus music. In fact, my parents wouldn't allow, you know, quote-unquote, secular music in the house. I was the firstborn, so I grew up with, I was a little bit later than the really early Jesus music, but grew up with Amy Grant and, for sure, Larry Norman and Randy Stonehill and Keith Green, and then discovered Mark Hurd, which some of your listeners might know, just a genius writer who was really undervalued. It's just amazing.
And who died way too early.
Yeah. And eventually Rich Mullins, who I eventually got to tour with. And a lot of those Christian music influences. And then kind of late teens, my younger brother, who was a little bit more rebellious than me, you know, came home and said, Carolyn, this is the Beatles, and this is the Who, and this is, you know, even Billy Joel and Elton John, some of those songwriters. And so my world kind of expanded that way, too. But I still, you know, would say people like Mark Hurd and Rich Mullins, and even, you know, vocally in the early days, Amy Grant, are still huge seminal influences for me.
Well, and that seems to, I mean, I look at, and looking at your lyrics and that, there's this whole storytelling thread that's running through. I mean, if you look at Rich Mullins and you look at Mark Hurd and Larry Norman, you know, these guys all were storytellers through their music. And I find that happens through your lyrics as well. Did they influence you, or did they just help you to sort of go down that path that you were already going down in your own creativity?
I don't know. You know, I would think that I was listening to them early enough that they influenced me. I mean, I think God kind of bakes some stuff into each of us in terms of where our strengths are going to be, and I do have sort of a basic belief that sort of one of our jobs while we're here is to tell our story and kind of, you know, just document the stuff that happens to us and where we see God intersecting with our lives. And so I think that impulse was always there. I always loved a good story. For sure, listening to and reading great storytellers really helped shape that and move it forward, I hope.
Well, what I need to do is take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with our guest, Carolyn Ahrens, and we're going to talk about her latest CD, Love Was Here First. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station.
In the need of prayer, it's me. but it's me, oh Lord, standing in the need of prayer. Not my sister, not my brother, but it's me, oh Lord, standing in the need of prayer. Oh, it's me.
Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to Standing in the Need of Prayer from Carolyn Aaron's CD, Love Was Here First. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with Carolyn. Looking at Standing in the Need of Prayer, that is an absolutely neat arrangement of that old spiritual. What sort of led you to decide to do a new arrangement of that song?
Well, I've always loved that song. When you were asking me earlier about my musical influences, what I didn't mention, because it just doesn't give me tons of street cred, was that there was just tons of Southern gospel and, you know, Gaither 8-tracks and all that kind of stuff in my house growing up, and I love that stuff. And I would have heard Standing in the Need of Prayer very young. But it's funny, I've always loved that song, but I've always thought for kind of the desperation of the lyric, most of the arrangements I heard of it were awfully peppy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know, I think one night I was feeling like I was in fact standing in the need of prayer, which is a common occurrence, and I just wondered if there was a way I could sing it that would express more how the lyric, you know, felt inside my own head and heart. And so I tried putting it in a minor key and slowing it down, and then it was really, there's an amazing gospel trio here called the Sojourners.
Oh.
Have you heard those guys?
Just the first time I heard them was on the CD, and when I heard the dude doing the background, I'm going, all right, you know.
Yeah, they're pretty phenomenal. And so I brought those guys in. They actually sang on 3 songs on the album. It was just I was just a kid in the candy store. They're just amazing, these old bluesy, great voices. And but that song, it's funny, they really struggled with because they had heard it the old way a lot of times. So to get them into the minor key and get them into the mode, it took us a while to get there. But once we were there, everybody liked hanging out there for a while. So
yeah.
Happy with how it turned out.
Well, looking at Love Was Here First, that's your 10th CD. Looking at that whole process from, you know, this time to the first time you went into a studio, what was it like? What were the differences between the first time you stepped into a studio and now that you're doing your 10th CD?
Wow. Well, it's a good question. I think part of it is how much time has passed. Can I remember the first time I stepped into a studio? I mean, I fell in love with studios quite early on when I was going to university. I sort of got the recording bug, and I found a studio in Vancouver that had this deal that if you recorded from midnight till 8 in the morning, you could get the studio time for half off. So when I was going to school, I'd go to school during the day. I had a job after school, and then I would go to the studio and record all night as much as I possibly could. I've always loved the process. Always felt like, a bit like it's going into going into some kind of deep, dark mine with one of those coal miner hats on with the light and just kind of chipping away at the black stuff until all of a sudden you find something good. You know, you find mm-hmm. cool. I think I'm mixing my mining metaphors, but hopefully you get the idea. Anyway, so I've always loved it. For sure, my first project I recorded in Nashville with Brown Bannister, who was and is a massive producer, had worked on all these big records. I knew him mostly from Amy Grant. He'd been Amy Grant's producer. Loved every minute of that process. Was probably very tentative then, but he was very encouraging and nurturing. And really, by the second CD, he was already crediting me as a co-producer. And by the 10th album, you know, I do the production. Now I co-produce with a great Vancouver guy out here that a lot of people know named Roy Salmon.
Yep.
And really, I mean, I still have that same kind of sense of wonder and play that I had from the beginning. That bug has never gone away. I've just sort of found more ways to use up enormous amounts of time, plugging things in and trying different things. And, every CD is kind of a new sonic adventure. And so, like, this last one, bringing in the gospel trio, this last one was the first time I got to use a horn section. And again, I mean, I have to sort of hide in the control room so they can't see how hard I'm grinning because it feels vaguely unprofessional. But it's just fun. I love the process.
Now, in liking the process of the studio, of course, there's always the flip side of that, and that's the live performance, which is the one way that you get people to know who you are and buy your CDs. What is the live performing aspect of it like to you?
Well, that would be even more of a journey, I think, even more of a being somewhere really different than I was when I started out. When I started out, I had the impulse to play for people. I had these songs. I was shy, but I had this sort of drive to want to share the songs with people. But I just had terrible stage fright when I started out, and I would get the Billy Goat voice, you know, where you get this vibrato of fear that you don't want in your voice, and feel sick, and my knees would knock. And so when I first got a break in music, it was to write songs for other people, and I thought, well, this is perfect. You know, I can get this creative impulse out and do this thing I feel, you know, called to do, but I don't have to go and put myself out there on the line. But what ended up happening, a whole bunch of different things happened, but a really pivotal one was I was at a music conference, and I was actually there as a songwriter sitting on some panels, but I had a bit of time off, and so I sat in the back of a performance coach's panel, a guy named Tom Jackson, who's still around, still coaching lots of people.
And Kevin Pauls, who is based here in Kitchener, does some stuff with Tom Jackson quite frequently.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And so I ended up being in the back of Tom's seminar, and he's giving all these great practical tips on performance. And then he said the thing that really changed things for me. He said, you know, most performers, they think that a great concert is about, you know, what they wear and what the lighting's doing and how great their voice is that night and all that stuff. And he said, you know, all that stuff matters. It all contributes in some way to the experience. But it's not really why people are there. The reason people come to a concert, come to a musical event, is because they want to make a connection and they want to feel loved. And this light bulb went off for me, and I thought, that's true. You know, every amazing concert I've ever been at as an audience member, I've had that feeling of, you know, he's singing to me. Bono is singing to me. You know, it's my life, and we're connected. So I really related to that. So he said, Tom went on, and he said, so, you know, performers have to understand that their first job is to love their audience. And then he said this, the enemy of love is self-consciousness. And I realized that as this shy person, I had been letting self-consciousness get in the way of loving people, you know, not only on a stage, but really in every part of my life, and that I had to get over it. And so literally I was booked like a week later to sing in this little songwriting room called the Railway Club in Vancouver, and feeling sick before the show, and I just prayed and said, okay, God, you know what, I just need to get over myself and not be self-conscious, so help me, you know, just for tonight to love this little audience in this room. And I walked out on stage, and all of a sudden, I wasn't thinking about whether I was going to say something stupid or my voice was going to crack or whatever. I was suddenly really curious about the people there, why they were there, what kind of day they'd had, what they were looking for that night. And for the first time ever, I had an incredible amount of fun singing music for people and with people. And really, I mean, it sounds kind of cliche that it flipped that quickly, but really from that day forward, you know, playing music live has been maybe one of my absolute favorite things to do, and there's really nothing like it.
What's it like for you on the road, you know, traveling and making sure that you're keeping in contact with your family, keeping in contact with the people back home, you know, staying stable relationally with God and that? Do you find that's a challenge when you're doing the road stuff as well?
It definitely can be. I mean, my touring has been really different in different seasons. When I was starting out, we did a couple of very, very long tours, and I was still a young married. My husband Mark was incredibly patient, would fly out as many weekends as possible. But it was, you know, I was doing something I loved. It was the time of my life, but for sure, it took work to stay grounded and stay connected to home, and as you said, connected to God. And unfortunately, I always toured with people for whom that was a priority too. So you know, we would have we tried to have band Bible studies in the green room and stuff like that, and it was mostly the conversations, I think, that kept us grounded and kept us growing. These days, I have two kids, and and lots of things going on. And so for the last several years, we've been in a rhythm where what our family kind of feels like we can manage is a maximum of 2 weekends a month. So something like every other weekend, I'll go out and do, a weekend worth of performances. And so there's from an artistic point of view, there's pros and cons to that, because sometimes if you just go out on the road, you can get in a mode that's harder to get into just going out on weekends. But in terms of a balanced life, that seems to be working pretty good for us.
Great. Well, we need to take another break, and after this final break, we'll finish our conversation with Carolyn Ahrens. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station.
That day in the garden, he fell for the lie. Now we just keep falling, one lie at a time. It seems like forever we've been under this curse. Love was here first. Now everything's broken, everything fails. We can't quite imagine that love will prevail. We got to remember when the bad goes to worse. Love was here.
Back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to The Last Word by Carolyn Ahrens from her Love Was Here first CD. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to wrap up our conversation with Carolyn. Now, one of the things that kind of prompted the interview in that is the release of your book, Theology in Aisle 7, The Uncommon Grace of Everyday Spirituality. And in it, Mark Galley, who's a senior managing editor of Christianity Today, tells his side of the story about how you started writing for them. What's your side of the story about how you ended up starting to write for Christianity Today?
Well, I have another friend at Christianity Today, another Mark. His name is Mark Mooring, and he's the arts and entertainment side of that publication. And I had gotten to know him through my music. He had interviewed me a few times when different CDs had come out, and we had become friends. And then when I wrote my first book, there was a book called Living the Questions, which is now called Wrestling with Angels. It has a new title. But when that book came out and he read it, he said, hey, I think you can write stuff that doesn't have guitar chords behind it. So he started getting me to write film reviews. And to this day, I still do that, although I think I'm a terrible film reviewer. I just hate critiquing things. I just want everything to be great, so it always stresses me out unbelievably if I don't like the movie, having to do it. But anyway, he got me to do that, and I do it, and I've been doing it for years. And so I guess what happened, unbeknownst to me, Philip Yancey, who I love, another author.
Oh, yes.
Who's meant a tremendous amount, I know, to me, it sounds like to you and to lots of people. He wrote a standing column for them for years and years and years. And he decided he wasn't going to write the column anymore, which I didn't know about, but they did. And so they got this big committee together to find some new voices for the magazine. And I guess my buddy Mark Mooring said, well, what about Carolyn Ahrens? And everybody said, well, she's a singer. Well, how would that work? But somehow he talked them into giving me a shot. So they called me and said, hey, do you want to try writing a column for us? And but it'll just be for a year. No matter what, it'll just be for a year. That's how we went into it.
And that's 4 years ago.
That's 4 years ago, yeah. They had this idea that they were going to change writers every year, but somehow or other, we're still doing it. And, it's been a huge adventure. It's a really neat way to be in conversation with people all over North America. That magazine gets a huge amount of readership in the magazine and online.
Yeah.
And people have no problem telling you where you're right and where you're wrong in your column. So it's been a good adventure for me in terms of just hearing the spectrum of viewpoints there are in Christendom, and being the way that iron can sharpen iron if we're in conversation together and we're after the truth.
Well, we're just quickly running out of time here. Looking at the collection coming out as an ebook, how did that come about?
Well, they again, Christianity Today came to me and they said, you know what, we think that this could make a book. And so Mark Galley, who you've already mentioned, he started gathering up all the columns and kind of finding a rhythm to them and the way that they belong together. And I love kind of how you've already alluded to his introduction, the fact that he says, okay, there's 25 chapters here, each of them a sort of a snapshot into some aspect of what it is to try to follow Jesus in the world that we currently find ourselves. And so 25 chapters is perfect for a month's worth of, kind of devotional reading. And if you're going, well, wait, 25 readings is, you know, five less than a month. Exactly, there's some grace to miss a few days. And this is about grace to begin with. So I love that. That works for me. You know, a month's worth of reading, but you can have 5 days off.
Quickly, we do have to wrap up here, but where can people get information about you, your music, and your books?
CarolynAarons.com is probably the best place to go for all that info.
Great. Carolyn, thanks for your time tonight.
Thank you, Robert. This has been fun.
Great. And thank you for listening to Arts Connection today. Thank you to my guest, Carolyn Aarons. Be sure to tune in next week for another look at where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet. For more information on Arts Connection, email robert@selawministries.ca. That's S-E-L-A-W ministries.ca. Or follow us on Twitter at selaw13, S-E-L-A-W-13. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.
You've been listening to Arts Connection, a production of Selav Ministries. Be sure to tune in again next Thursday evening at 10, right here on Faith FM.